Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast all about a life following Watford Football Club. And gosh, we had a good weekend. A 5-0 home win against Rotherham United. My name is John. With me this week, I've got Jason.
Good evening.
And a Michael.
We had a doubly good weekend, John, because our adopted Swedish team, Hammarby Women.
Oh, yes.
Who we podcasted from their top of the table clash. A couple of weeks ago, they won the league this weekend.
Excellent.
So double cause for celebration. The men's team were rubbish. They finished about eighth, and Djurgården, who we also saw in the derby, they finished out the European places as well. But Hammarby Women, top of the shop, championes. Congratulations to them, and of course, congratulations to our very own Golden Boys. 5-0, love it. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
So you must have had a good day on Saturday, Mike.
I did. Even I enjoyed that, John. But I think it that was topped. We had a good day, just as Watford fans. But saw an amazing thread. You've probably seen it on social media yourself. And this for me is the essence of this is how good football can be. So it's a thread from Paul Window. His name is on Twitter. Windo. I'm not sure if that's his surname or whatever. So Paul on Twitter. This amazing thread. Now his son Ethan has been to Watford a fair few times, never seen them win. And on Saturday morning, Ethan got selected to play for a team the year above. So he was called up to a higher age group team. He played in that game. I think they won. He got player of the match. So they started off well for them. Then Paul and Ethan headed to Vicarage Road, probably more in hope than expectation, like most of us these days. They went to the Junior Hornets sort of pre-match event, which is on Vicarage Road, isn't it, by the Graham Taylor mural. If you haven't checked that out, be sure to. If you've got young Junior Hornets, there's loads going on there. But part of the thing that you can take part in there is the opportunity to win, I guess, or be chosen as a young Junior Hornet to present the Hero of the Match award at the end of the game. And following on from his success in his football earlier that morning, Ethan was selected to present the Hero of the Match. Then, of course, the game, which we'll go on to talk about, was absolutely tremendous. Ethan got to see Watford finally win, walked round by Watford royalty from their seat. So Anne Swanson walked them round the ground. And I think just as the fourth goal went in, they were sort of walking in front of the rookery. So got to see that, experience that amazing atmosphere of a goal being scored at that end, and the cascade of noise coming down from the stands, and then got round to the tunnel just in time to see the fifth. Fist bumped all the players off as they came in, and then Ethan was able to award the Hero of the Match to Rajovic. And if that doesn't sum up what sticking with it means, what it can deliver, you know, they'd have been well within their rights to sack it off. Watford are terrible, never seen them win, we'll do something else after your match in the morning. They stuck with the team and got rewarded with a memory that will last a lifetime. Absolutely superb. So well done, Paul. Well done, Ethan. Well done, Watford. And just delighted that, they had an even better day than the rest of us.
But of course, it was a great win. It was five. It's six unbeaten now. And I think I totaled up correctly. On aggregate, over the last six games since that Sunderland defeat, it's 10-3 to Watford, which is a great, great way of looking at it. Jason, before the game, as we're walking up, Dave and I and Ollie Wicken were walking up from the pub. And Dave said it'd be great if it was a routine 2-0. Can you get, and was it? Could you even get anywhere near calling that a routine 5-0?
No, I think the only team that can have routine 5-0s are Manchester City. I'm not sure about Watford. It was a good 5-0. It's nice to enjoy those days. You get games sometimes where you don't want them to end and you just want to carry on because all you can see happening is your team scoring more and more goals. So, yeah, it's always great at the end. Clap the team off. That was really nice. But I was slightly disappointed because I wanted it to carry on and see some more goals. So it's nice to have games like those. I suppose we need to caveat it with the point. It did feel rather routine, didn't it? Because Rotherham were pretty poor. They weren't very good. They were struggling. They suffered at the end as well with having made those changes to try and make something happen. They were then left without a substitute when Cafu decided he needed to lie down.
He took a free kick. He had a shot on target for them. I think he deserved the rest.
So I've just actually worked out that we've scored just over 43% of our goals this season have been against the teams in the bottom three. The 10 of the 23 against teams in the bottom three. So it's good that we're beating those teams. Obviously, we need to do that. You can only beat what's in front of you as well. One for the cliches there. And we did it. There's always that potential for a banana skin. We saw the game against Sheffield Wednesday did prove to be a bit tricky. They were trying to get a bit of a new manager bounce, but we got through that one. And then we got through the one on Saturday by putting in a decent performance and putting them to the sword. So we talk about, you mentioned sort of six games unbeaten and how we've sort of won 10-3 over those games. We've had games that are tricky against sides we should be beating. We've had a game that's comfortable against sides we should be beating. So, yeah, you've got to be able to put in both performances, and we've done that.
We've made a mess of games like that in the past, in the not-too-distant past, haven't we? We've really, really struggled against teams we should put away. JC mentioned it there, Sheffield Wednesday. We nearly norsed that up, didn't it? And they got thumped 4-0 at home by Millwall at the weekend. They look like a lost cause as well. And John, you mentioned it there, and I think it is worth looking back at those at what happened before this little clutch of six games. That Sunderland away game was almost as concerning as the Leeds game, I thought. They looked haunted. They looked completely unable to sort of compete. And I think if we hadn't gone on to do what we've done in these last six games, the season could well have spiralled out of control. Leeds was an absolute car crash. Sunderland, they looked like they were waiting to be beaten. So Valerian Ismail and his staff and this team had some real work to do to staunch the bleeding, just to stop the sort of spiralling out of control which seemed to be happening before our eyes. And yes, we've been relatively lucky with the teams that we've played, but every time you play at this level, you've got another team, another manager who is drilled and trained to stop you doing what you want to do, and you've got to deal with it. And Watford, by and large, in these last six games have found a way to do it. I think Huddersfield, we'll part that one. That was disappointing. But again, in the context of that run of six games, it's a point away from home, which that helps build momentum. So I think credit where it's due, with the caveat of who we're playing, but to turn around the ship from that, we were adrift. We looked like we had that sort of 1,000-yard stare. And it could have easily gone really badly wrong. So to turn it round so well from that really, really forgettable, disappointing and worrying night at the Stadium of Light, I think is something that we can all get on board with.
Because I always think there's points where people sort of say, this 5-0, this will be a turning point. And I never think that. I always think, what was the bad defeat before it that gave you the turning point? And it was reminded of them, like, you know, the game that sort of lead to big results. Because when we came out of the ground, met up with Ollie, and he said, when was the last time we won 5-0? Not by five goals, literally 5-0. And the first game we could actually think of was that Bristol City at home in the promotion season, last promotion season, where we won 6-1. So by five. And then Dave had to go on the internet for it. I don't think we've won 5-0. We did twice in the promotion season 2015. What were those 5-0s?
I think I know what they are.
God, Jace, if anyone was,
because as you started talking about it, I was thinking about because there was the Fulham game, wasn't there? Because you started talking about a game like that being a turning point, and I instantly thought of that Fulham game because that did feel like a turning point. And then not long after, I think it was, I can't remember if it was either before or after the Blackpool 7-2. Didn't we smash Cholton 5-0?
Correct. Yeah, they were the two that Dave looked up on the internet, the database thing. That's available, and it was. And I always think, like, even that 6-1.
John, you make it sound really exotic. Dave had to use the internet to find out.
Yes, he used an internet on his phone, so he had to use that. It wasn't memory. I think the point I wanted to make was Dave didn't remember it. He hasn't got that sort of detail like Jason has. There's no memory. Sorry, Dave, but it was the idea.
He remembers useful information. My head just remembers useless information.
But I always think back to the game that went before it, and like you say, that Fulham game, which we talk about being the turning point. Yeah. We had been absolutely dire before it. I think we'd lost five in a row, or at least it felt that way. And then the Bristol City game, we'd had that terrible. It was a draw away at Coventry.
Yeah.
Or was it Birmingham at Coventry? I can't remember which one it was. But it was just the worst performance we had seen. The, you know, after that, there was no chance of us getting promoted. Pretty much what we said on that podcast. Yeah. But that game sort of turned it around. And what I like about this one, we've always talked about it, like a slow turning of a ship. This last couple of games, even though not all amazing, it is felt like a turning of a ship, the turning and the bringing together of certain players to get us to this point where, you know, there was a point before they went down to 10 men, we were 3-0 up. And you think, yeah, a team below you, you should win 3-0. That should be good. If you're a good team and they're as bad as they should be because they're down at the bottom of the league, you sort of expect a good 3-0 is a good result. But what I liked more so was when they did go down to 10, we kept our foot on the accelerator.
Yeah.
And we went and got those last two goals. And certain players got those goals, which means, you know, a lot. And I suppose that's what I want to talk about, really, is, you know, those individuals, what this game means to them, you know, from what they've achieved or what they've been doing so far, but also what it means sort of going onwards. But the first question I want to ask you before we go on to the players, at what point, Mike, and Jason, of course, what point did you feel quietly confident on Saturday?
Well, you know me.
It was
chaps.
The final whistle, probably, or was it a bit before that?
Yeah, 95th minute when we got the... I think if I'm being perfectly honest and dispassionate about it, I think when... At half-time, I think when it was 2-0, Rajovic had taken second goal. I think at that stage, having seen what Rotherham were doing and how they were going about things that afternoon, I felt like as long as we came out in the second half and performed, like even just a normal, adequate performance should have seen it over the line from there. I felt comfortable at half-time. And I was pleased to do that. Just to caveat Rotherham slightly, I did watch the midweek against Ipswich, and I thought they were really good. They got they fought back to get a 2-2 draw against one of the best performing teams in the division, having gone 2-1 down right at the end. So they did show battling qualities. They showed that they're not a pushover. So for me to feel like that at half time, I think was testament to Watford and their professional performance as much as it was to Rotherham not necessarily turning up on the day.
Because I wasn't ready at 2-0. Because always that thing, Jason always says this, he says, you know, 2-0 is the worst scoreline to have. Because when you get one back, if they get one back, all of a sudden it feels so much worse to watch that game of football. But I also think the fact they had come back and got a 2-2 in the week, yeah. I'm thinking, oh no, we definitely need a third. And I think for me it was that third goal that sort of went, no, fine, there's enough of a thing there and a gap. And they would, you know, they looked a little bit mentally shocked, and then, I say, when they went down to 10, it was different. Jace?
Yeah, I think similar somewhere along those lines. I think the fact, like Mike said, 2-0, and having seen what Rotherham were like, you're thinking, OK, we should be fine. And the fact that nothing much happened, I think they had a wayward shot, didn't they, early on in the second half, and then we came up the other end and scored quite quickly. I think that if there were any nerves left in the system, they were soon gone when Kayembe scored.
Definitely. Mike, the players, and you know what this game might mean for them, and we hope it will mean for them. Colin, at half-time, we saw him at half-time, and he said, Rajovic, he's a goal machine. He's a goal machine. He just scored two, and that's six goals he scored in 12 games. I know you're not ready to call him a goal machine, but the fact he did score those two goals, and in fact, before the game, Colin said, all he's got to do is stay between the goalposts.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he did, and he scored two goals. I know that's like, it's not necessarily seeing him develop as a player, adding new style goals for him. But it was fantastic to sort of see him doing what he could do.
He's supposed to. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's actually 6-13, but because it's 6-12 and you're at that 1-2 level, aren't you? Which is, you know, any striker is going to take that. I mean, I think Watford have probably had seasons in the not too distant past where six goals has probably been our leading scorer, certainly, and or certainly not far off it. And yeah, you're right, John. He's not changing really as a player. What I think he's looking relatively comfortable in his own skin. I don't think he is going missing or worried about things. He looks okay in the Watfordshire and in the Championship. And as Colin said, stay between the posts, do what you're good at, and you'll probably score goals. And now, of course, for him to do that, we've got to play to his strengths. And we've spoken already about how teams like Rotherham are a potential banana skin, and they're hard to beat. Well, we worked out pretty quickly that we could get some joy down the left-hand side with King Ken. If he can get balls into the box, then you're always in with a chance with Rajovic. Unlocked him pretty easily. Sorry, not easily, pretty quickly. It was 10th minute, I think, when he scored his first. And I actually tempted to say it's a bit of a carbon copy for the second, but I think he actually had a little bit of work to do. He had to reset his feet. He was in danger of getting there just a little bit too early, so he had to show a little bit of nimble, quick feet just to reset himself and to finish with the aplomb that he did. And, you know, he will have gone in at half-time feeling $1 million, as will his teammates, because they'd unlocked Rotherham, and they would have expected Rotherham to be sort of doughty in their defending and tough to break down. And the beauty of it was the simplicity. Get it down the flank, beat your man, decent ball in, big striker sticks it in the back of the net.
How did you see those goals, Jason?
The first one, I know what Mike's saying about it being simple, but I think we can go back to the sort of start of that move. Just to show how good it was, I thought I was pleased with it and impressed with it, because we started off with the ball, we moved out to the right hand side, we had a look to see if we could develop anything down there, we couldn't, but we moved the ball back across really quickly. I think it was a ball to Hoot, and then Hoot in front of Lewis, I think, or I'm not sure if it went to Ken first, but we played it down the left pretty quickly in front of the player. We created space by moving the ball out to the right in the first place and exploited it quickly. Kone joined in to create a triangle out there to move the ball around. And yeah, Ken got the ball in the box early as well, which is not something he always does. Sometimes he likes to get to the byline, roll around his defender, but actually spotting the run of Rajovic doing a great job, as we've seen him do, of getting in between the defenders, losing sort of both the markers. And when he's playing as a lone striker, you'd think it'd be quite easy to be occupied by either of the centre-backs. But he's managed to find space in between them. Ken's put the ball right on the money and he's put it in the back of the net. So, yeah, for me, that was really pleasing to see.
Yeah, lots of goals, like you said, like from there. But, Jason, I think my favourite goal, most deserving goal, was Kayembe's.
Yeah, absolutely. I think before he scored, from what I'd seen up to that point, he'd been my sort of favourite player of the day. I just thought let's go back to the old football is a simple game and all that. Midfielders, what do you need them to do? You need them to do a bit of everything, don't you? You need them to be good markers, good tacklers, good in the air, good on the ground, good with the ball, good without the ball. And he seemed to do that without too much fuss. But then there are also moments of I don't know if I want to say magic, but or little moments of brilliance or little moments of skill being done in the right places. I think there was a point later on in the game where he did a little I think he went, let the ball go through his legs and a little flick, time flick out to to the right hand side. But again, that was done in the attacking third. Okay, yeah, great, do that. That's the place to do it, and it came off. And I just thought, yeah, the passing seemed to be on the money. Positioning was good. Getting back when we needed to. Getting the challenges in. I just thought his all-round performance was good. So to then see him score his first goal for Watford, that was pleasing. And it was good movement in the box that a striker would be pleased with. Sort of, yeah, getting the ball in. He was obviously back to goal. Ball coming in on his left, I think, took it with his right to sell the defender, and then just a swivel and put it in the bottom corner with his left. Just, yeah, great striker play from our central midfielder.
He seemed to have grown in stature, I think. And obviously we brought him in when we were in the Premier League, so there was hope at some stage, no matter how forlorn, that he could perform at the top level. And I think he's grown in, much like Rajovic, just looks like he's comfortable. I think initially Rajovic potentially looked like he knew he had something to prove. It looked like he knew he felt it was a big step up. And Kayembe, I think, has just sort of seemed to grow into that role in midfield, because I think it's where I was going to say it's where we've had problems. We've had problems with defence, we've had problems with midfield, and we've had problems with attack. But we have looked a little bit lightweight in midfield, haven't we? You can't really say that we've bossed the midfield up until a certain point this season, which I think we're starting to do now. And I think Kayembe is feeding off Livermore, and I think
absolutely, yeah.
And Kone is feeding off them as well. He looks aggressive and focused and full of intent again. So I think those three are sort of, I wouldn't go so far as to say they look formidable, but they look like they know how to take charge of it and to do what a functioning midfield needs to do at this level. And I think, yeah, him and Livermore feeding off each other has been good. We've sort of bemoaned the lack of senior players, if you like, not in terms of age, just in terms of who's going to take hold of the team and the squad and sort of shape them and guide them. And those two seem to be the ones that are leading the way. I mean, moving away from Kayembe, but I mentioned him now, but Livermore in particular, the way he cajoles and he's always talking to players whenever there's a break. You know, previously we've been caught short, haven't we, when there's been injuries and we've taken a while to start again, yeah. And you've conceded. Livermore's around patting people on the back, talking to people, pointing and gesturing, congratulating people for a bit of play from earlier. He's playing that captain's role demonstrably. And I think him and Kayembe are building a really, really strong, impressive and important partnership. But as you say, John, really delighted for him to score. It feels like it's been coming, doesn't it? He's obviously got a decent ping on him, and he took it really, really well, as everyone did. All five goals were well taken, but that one felt really nice, didn't it, for him to get that, the sort of monkey off his back. He's been getting closer and closer and closer, and eventually he did it. And I said I was comfortable at two, but for him to score, what was it, 55 minutes, to score then and to really, really put it to bed, that's an important goal at an important time in an important game. And it would have felt good for him. And if we can see that he's growing as a player and his performances are becoming more and more impactful, he certainly will, his teammates will, and Valerian Ismail will. So, yeah, just to get a goal, you walk that little inch taller, don't you? So, yeah, delighted for him. And as Jace has articulated, really, really good goal.
There's several players in that starting 11 who, it was almost like another opportunity for you. This is we're giving you another chance now, boys. Come on, let's see what you can do. Partly Asprilla, but mainly it comes down to Porteous, but also Ben Hamer. Now, Porteous had, he has his, I don't want to say temper, his energy that he has at certain moments. And you don't want him to lose his, and it's not even losing his head, that seems over the top. But that sort of side that we're all aware of him, he did it, my favourite bit. I know the Kiambe through his legs, little sort of to re-guide the kick through his legs into the didn't come off. There's one bit where the ball was being played through, and Porteous just stuck his leg back and it hit his heel, and he sort of, I'm defending here. Anything come away, I'm going to knock it out of the way. And he seemed a little bit more confident from playing a little bit more football. And of course, he did. It led a little run forward. And he did lead to, assisting Kayembe's goal. And they were both celebrating quite furiously, I suppose. But good to sort of see him and Hamer, Mike. That defensive, changing to those pawns at the back there. It could be quite, quite an impact. I know they weren't massively tested, but it worked.
I was actually thinking about Ben Hamer sort of after the game. We didn't notice that the number one goalkeeper wasn't playing at all. And yes, that comes down to did Rotherham have one shot on target, that Cafu free kick? There wasn't really a great deal that Ben Hamer had to do, but he did it all fairly comfortably. He sort of seemed to be in command. He knew where his goal was, which makes a change from one of the last times we saw him, which was away at Coventry last season, where he seemed to think that one ball was going wide and he just ushered it into the bottom corner.
Yes, yeah.
But he felt competent and confident and in charge. I think he was fine. He was absolutely fine, and it was a decent free kick from Cafu. He had to get everything behind it and make sure he don't spill it or it ricochets out. He did what he had to do. He was competent, and I think the fact that probably no one will remember that Ben Hamer was in goal, that's in terms of the agenda and talking about the game, his appearance will be fairly low down the sort of list of conversational topics, and I think that says it all. And that's for a goalkeeper, that's a good thing. He can pocket his clean sheet bonus and probably put his feet up for a couple of weeks. Porteous, there was some guy on the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes a couple of weeks ago that calls him Portois, which I absolutely love. It's giving him that sort of continental edge, which I absolutely love. So I might start calling him Portois as well. I like that. I really, really like Ryan Porteous. I like what he... I just love the energy. I like the sort of chaos. I like the fact that he is, you know, he could be hero or villain. You don't really know which one what it's going to be. I mean, he's always a million miles an hour. I mean, he started the game off and he flew into a challenge, got beaten. And then as he was trying to recover to make a covering tackle, he literally sort of like fell over. Such was his momentum. And that kind of sums Ryan Porteous up. I think, you know, in the Premier League, we'd get sorted out. I don't think there's any question there. But then, of course, on the flip side, he performs well for Scotland on a regular basis. He's great fun, I think, to have in your side. Great fun to have in there. You do want characters because it does feel like for quite a long time we haven't had many players that we can sort of get behind and love and enjoy and sort of smile about, and I think he definitely is one of them. But it'd be remiss of us not to, or me, I'm the one talking, to say that his faults are pretty clear to see on a regular basis. And if the choice between him, if I was the manager and had the choice between him and Francisco Sierra, I'd probably go for Sierra personally. I don't know what you guys think. I'd be interested to know. Perhaps I'm being a little bit harsh. And because the other thing is, his centre-back partner, Wesley Hurt, looked really, really good on Saturday. But again, I don't want to call him a flat-track bully because that's not fair. But when you're a centre-back and the opposition don't really look like scoring, your job is much, much easier than it might be against teams with much more of an attacking intent. And we've seen Wesley Hurt struggle as well. But yeah, it'd be... churlish, really, to argue too much about the performances of anyone defensively, really, because clean sheet and restricted them to very, very little.
Yeah, Jason, the other one, sort of the other two players, and one of them being Ryan Andrews, who was back before he heads off to, I think he's playing Italy and Germany for the under-20s in this coming week or so. He was the one who put the ball, you know, he's attacking, running forward and making things happen. And he helped Tom Ince out with the fourth goal. Big thing for, I still hate it, absolutely hate it. I hate cheering Tom Ince. but good for both of them, I suppose, with Tom being, you know, in this game, but not every game, the substitute to come on and help out with a Spreer's position when he goes off. But again, Andrews coming back and having an impact and making himself known that's a good thing for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And he was probably a bit fortunate because Ngakoue had probably had the best run he'd had in a Watford shirt. Ironically, after Andrews was suspended after the Sunderland sending off. So for Ngakoue to then fall ill, he then gets his place back. You'd imagine Ngakoue would have started given form. Over recent games. But again, like Ngakoue did, taking his chance when he got his moment, I think Ryan Andrews did again on Saturday. And I think it's a tough decision for Ismael to what he does after the international break, because you've got two right-backs all of a sudden that are looking good. Yep, you mentioned the assist for the goal. And again, what we've liked about Andrews so far is he's good going forward. We've seen that. He's determined to move forward. He's good on the ball. And there was a moment that I liked as well in the second half where, again, he's done well to get into the penalty area, got the wrong side of the defender. I think he just got a challenge in. He just couldn't quite control the ball to get a decent shot away. But had he been able to, the target was there. I think he just couldn't quite control it. The ball's gone out. And you could see his frustration there. I think he had a little kick at the advertising hoardings. I hope he didn't break anything. But that passion was there and that sort of desire to do well, even when I think we probably would have been 3-0 up at that point. He still wants to get in there and create another chance, maybe get another goal, not stopping running, giving it his all. Perhaps part of that is knowing that Ngakoue has been playing well and he knows he's got to fight for his place now. And it's good to see in such a young lad.
Can I ask you both a question? Well, before we move on from the defence, I think the brilliant thing about Ryan Andrews is he looks every inch the footballer, doesn't he? He looks a footballer that's going to do his defensive duties and is also going to ask questions of the opposition. He'll be someone that when you watch tape, they will recognise him as being someone they're going to have to keep an eye on. I think he looks confident. His intent is good. He's obviously quick. He's brave. He's confident. And I think hopefully he's got a really, really long career ahead of him at Watford. And I think he's probably the man in possession now, and that is super unlucky for Ngakoue. I think he had earned the right to stay in possession of the shirt, but I think, personally, Ryan Andrews is the better footballer. But talking about players that look like a footballer, there's someone who I just would quickly want to get your opinion on, John and Jason. That's Jamal Lewis. And I think, quietly, he's sort of starting to... The first time he played for Watford, we thought, right, OK, proper footballer, you can see his experience, his positional play is good, he looks comfortable, yada, yada, yada. Then went off the boil a little bit, with the rest of them, in fairness. And now is sort of, for me, is quietly starting to sort of turn into the player that I think we hoped he'd be. I'm not sure if I'm willing that into existence, or whether you guys felt that as well. Sort of the way he gets forward down the left kind of mirrors Andrews down the right, and the link-ups feel like they're starting to be forged down there. Is that me sort of trying to will that into existence, or have you guys picked up on that as well?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, I can't remember which game it was. It was one recently where I thought we were starting to see much better from him, a decent performance at last. I think he's probably... Just his situation with him sort of coming in from Newcastle. So he went to Newcastle on the crest of a wave, thought that was it, thought he was then going to be an established Premier League player. Obviously, that hasn't worked out for him quite like he'd want, and he's had to drop back down a level to get some game time. So that probably did knock his confidence. And then, sort of coming into this side, he was injured at the start, wasn't he, as well? You can understand why it might have been difficult at the start for him, but he does seem to have settled now. I think the focus from Watford on Saturday was very much down that left-hand side. So clearly the trust was there that Lewis-Sema combination could deliver, and of course they did. And with Kone playing with them as well, like I said before, makes some nice triangles down that left-hand side. And that was something, again, I can't remember which game it was where they all sort of played well together as a sort of triumvirate, creating triangles and advancing the ball down the left. But you feel now, he's starting to get it. The confidence seems to be coming back that he would have had when he was sort of tearing up the Championship years ago. And you hope that this is just the beginning and that he starts to kick on and we see a lot more from him. I think we can. I don't think he's peaked by any means. I think we hopefully we will get to see more from him.
One player who... the other players who scored the fifth goal. One, I just talked about Martins a little bit. But Healy, Mike, we talked how much it's great for Lewis to have more games, for Andrews to have this exposure, for Kembe to have such a long run that he's had to make them better. But there was a moment just before the goal where it really looked like Reece Healy hasn't played a game of football for a very long time. But he did it. He did make a slight mistouch, but he got it. He moved it. And he set up Martins.
Yeah, and I think he will be kicking himself that he didn't take that on and score it himself. It got caught under his feet. And ultimately, he rescued and salvaged the situation and set up Martins for another good finish. The fifth of five really, really good clinical finishes. I think what's really noticeable with Reece Healy, and I think it's changed in terms of the slight change of attitude amongst us as supporters, because things are looking up a little bit more.
Yeah.
6, 7, 8, 9 games ago, Reece Healy was sort of almost a bit of a figure of fun and almost a bit of a poster boy for the limited transfer business that we've done this season. And it was sort of people laughing about how he left Toulouse to sign for Watford and Toulouse beat Liverpool and all this sort of stuff. And it just felt like, he was being written off to a degree because he wasn't getting into a side where our striking options are incredibly limited. And I sense now that there's a real desire for him to succeed. which there should be really for every Watford player. But I don't mind admitting that probably in my head I'd probably written him off and thought he's not going to do well for us. And you could just sense the crowd, the supporters really, really wanting him to do well. And of course he made that really, really crucial and massively unexpected. If there's an award for the most unexpected moment of the season, it should be Reece Healy getting that ball onto the bar against Millwall and saving our skin. That shouldn't be forgotten when we do the alternative end of season awards. So he sort of did announce himself in an unexpected way, and it's just shame he couldn't cap it off on Saturday with that goal, because he obviously as a goal scorer will be absolutely desperate to show that he is worth a roll of the dice and potentially worth looking at as maybe in part of a two at some time in the future when Valerian Ismail is undoubtedly going to have to mix things up, whether it's through injury, whether it's through suspensions, or just because of the nature of the teams we're playing. So what I liked, I guess, was I felt there was a tangible shift in desire to see him do well. Shame he didn't score, but what I loved was the tenacity to make sure that could have been a wasted opportunity. He made sure it got to Matthias Martins, who swept in for the fifth. So if we can get him a goal sooner rather than later, then that would be that would be good.
But what a goal it meant, for Martins. The return of the blonde hair is back, of course. But it was a good celebration from him, wasn't it, Jace?
yes, it was. I feel like I owe him an apology now, actually, because I was laughing. That he's put it in. It's the fifth goal in a 5-0 win against relegation fodder in injury time, and he's gone steaming over to the rookery end like he's just scored a 91st minute in the winner in the cup final against Manchester City. And I was laughing at it, and I was taking the mickey a bit, and then I thought about it afterwards. I thought, actually, isn't it great that someone can still be so excited and so passionate about sticking the ball in the back of the net for our club?
Absolutely.
At that point in that game. So, yeah, I'm sorry, Monsieur Martin, if we're going to start calling our players in their French accent. I shouldn't have taken the mickey. Great to see. It was a great finish and a great celebration.
Just on that, there was a moment where Kone was surging forward. The game was well and truly won. He came off quite late in the end, didn't he? But I can't remember. This will have been late in the game. He had the ball, was driving on, looking to set up another threat. And he got tapped from behind. He got fouled. And he was really cross. You could see that sort of sense of frustration because he could tell them to make the most of this positive momentum. And I think you said it right at the start, Jace. We didn't take... And we've wanted this for so long. When we've got the opportunity to put our foot on someone's necks, keep it there. And let's put them to the sword and make the other team suffer and build our confidence in the meantime while we do it. And I think the fact that Matthias Martins was celebrating in what was it, the 95th minute when he scored, I think is great. It's another goal for him. It's another goal for the club. He knows what it means for the supporters. Talking about a 5-0 sounds different to a 4-0, sounds different to a 3-0. You walk away and you're buzzing. Everyone talks about it on Monday morning. Oh, Watford did all right on Saturday, Mike. I saw they scored 5, and it gives everyone a lift. You can tell by the way we're talking today, and we've put the appropriate caveats in, but it's not easy to win a football match 5-0 in the Championship. It really isn't, and I think he's. You're right. I think your adjusted opinion on the celebration, Jace, is absolutely right. I want to see our players celebrating. It's slightly different if he'd scored and it was 5-0 to the opposition, then that was a consolation. But yeah, if we're sort of continuing to ride that crest of a wave against the opposition, I am all for it. And like you said, Jace, we didn't want it to end. I'm sure the players didn't want it to end either, and I think they probably got what they deserved in that respect to get it up to that sort of 5-0 is a notable scoreline, isn't it? 4-0's, there's probably always a fair few of them knocking around in the league at any given Saturday or Tuesday. 5-0 is one that really really stands out, and I think they deserved it. And I'm glad it was. I'm glad we were able to put that cherry on the already very tasty cake.
I'm not sure how many people are listening to this podcast thinking, I bet you Mike's going to be really moany about a 5-0. He's not, everybody. He is not.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Hornet Heaven is back for its 21st series, and it's a story about coping with difficult times as a Watford fan. Oh, we remember it. But this one is not from a recent one. The main character, George Catlew, who played with Cliff Hulton in the famous 1959-1960 promotion winning side. It's all based around him, and the action takes place shortly after George arrives in Hornet Heaven in May 1996, during the Jack Petchie era, when Watford have just been relegated, and when no one knows, of course, that Graham Taylor and Elton John will soon be reunited and get the club flying up the divisions once again. The story is divided into episodes in the style of a soap opera. You will enjoy that. And it is called Soap. This clip reveals exactly why.
George Catlow recognises the guy as soon as he sees him, but he just can't place the face. Excuse me, fella. I know you, don't I? Maybe, mate. It's definitely possible. Were you a player at Watford? A footballer? Love to have been. But nah, mate. Not me. Are you a fan? Yeah. Not Watford, though. Just my luck to find myself here. Watford ain't my team at all. Eh? Yeah. It's an odd one. Then what are you doing in Hornet Heaven? I don't know, to be honest. I think there's been a mistake. A clerical error. George frowns. He doesn't understand the precise mechanism by which people move from the land of the living into Hornet Heaven, but he'd be surprised if it involved paperwork. So, who's your team then? Walford. Walford? Yeah. Walford with an L, not Watford with a T. Someone must have slipped up. Typical. Now George knows exactly where he's seen the new arrival before, and this is what's so strange. Bloody hell, you're off EastEnders. Oh, right, you've seen it. Yeah, you're Arthur Fowler. Yep, that's me. George Catlow stares in amazement. Arthur Fowler from EastEnders is standing on Occupation Road in Hornet Heaven. This is unbelievable.
You can listen to Hornet Heaven, four little episodes, in all your usual podcast places, or go to hornetheaven.com. And remember, of course, don't know how many chapters you're through yet of Enjoy the Game. Hopefully you're sort of maybe halfway through by now. I know some people have listened to the whole thing. That's another Watfordy podcast to delve into again in this international break. But we come back after the international break, Michael, with plenty to look up about. It is Leicester City and what have you. But we're now a third of the way through the season. And it was at this point, at least this point in terms of the calendar, where we went away, me and our two lads, we went away to Bristol City just before the World Cup break. We're sort of that point again. It's only an international break. It's only a week off. We're 5 points and 7 places off the playoffs. We're 10 off the drop zone. The relegation chat is on pause. I'm not saying over. I'm saying on pause. But having accumulated all these points that we have, they're not many, over the last six games, knowing we're playing Leicester next, who are doing all right, we aren't as desperate, are we, as we might have thought, or at least you wondered and pondered a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree. I think what delighted me the most walking away on Saturday was the fact that it is an international break and Valerian Ismail and his team have earned the right to sort of pause for breath. And not relax, that's the wrong word. You can never relax midway through a season, obviously. But they've sort of, as you said there, John, they've sort of shunted away the spectre of potential relegation and this being a long, hard fight at the wrong end of the table. They've sort of parked that for now, and they've built a bit of confidence. And now the question is, what can they do? and they've given themselves that, that springboard, that platform that we weren't sure where it was going to come from. We looked shell-shocked against Leeds, we looked shell-shocked against Sunderland, and we thought, well, how are we going to build from this? It's a thin squad, we can't score, the defence looks porous, we hadn't solved the midfield issue. We didn't know where we were going to go. And to the team and to Valerian Ismail's immense credit, they've built some solid foundations on which to build. And now they need them, because the upcoming games are really tough. Leicester away, Norwich at home midweek under lights. We've got a reasonable record against Norwich, but I think the last time, certainly we had a big game under lights against Norwich in the Premier League and well and truly fluffed our line. So Norwich, absolutely no mugs. I think they had a decent result at the weekend. Hull away, who again are sort of a team that are building and are pretty impressed with Liam Rossini and what he's doing there. So long, difficult away trip there. Home to Ipswich, the story of the season for me so far in the Championship. Then away at Preston, then away at Blackburn. It's difficult. This is a real, real difficult run of games. But the great thing about what we've managed to do in the last six games is that we can go there, go into that run of games, yes, knowing it's going to be difficult, but at least hopeful that we can be competitive, organised, and not see that as a string of potentially disastrous results. It still may end up that way. We're yet really to turn in an impressive performance against one of the you call bigger and better clubs, I'd say. But it's what we've done is we've sort of dusted ourselves down and we're ready for our audition again, if you like, because I think this team they've got through their sort of first stage of auditions and now we're at judges' houses in the X Factor parlance, if that's even a thing. Now they're going to see what it's really like when the spotlight is properly on them, because this is going to be a tough run of games, demanding mentally and physically. They're going to be asked questions that they haven't been by many teams so far this season. You know, you do watch, sometimes you watch Watford's games and then you watch some of the more able sides at the top of the table playing, whether it's on the highlight show or on live games, and you do think, well, they're playing different matches to certainly to the game that we played on Saturday. And there's no escaping the fact that it is going to be really, really tough. But what I'm enthused about is that they've shown they can turn things round. They've shown they've got a bit of metal. They've obviously looked at themselves and tried to work out how's the best way to approach things. We've got Livermore in the side who seems to have made a big difference. Valerian Ismail has changed things and is, you know, we've talked about not scoring many goals, but overall the scoring record is okay. It helped that the five goals helped on Saturday, of course. So we've given ourselves that platform. We don't need to go in petrified. Which, when after the Sunderland game, if we'd have looked at that run of games, we'd be like, oh, God. Now I'm excited to see how they perform. I don't know how many points is realistic. I still wouldn't expect us to go to Leicester and win. I think going away to Hull is going to be difficult. So I've got no idea. I'll throw it back to you, John, and Jace for a realistic sort of points haul for the next, I don't know, four or five games.
I don't think I want a points haul. I don't want to think about it in that way. I know that sounds ridiculous. I do want points. I do. But I think it's that, you know, knowing what the division is and knowing that these are the better teams, on current form at least, bar a few, that we are going to be facing. And I just want to make sure that by the end of it, we have gained points. We have won some of those games. We have drawn a few of them, away games. Always nice to draw those away games. But I suppose what I want to feel is I just want to make sure that this is an ability for us to solidify who we are, what we are in terms of going forward and for the whole rest of the season, you know, what the expectations should be. Is this actually a team that can properly set up and maybe win four out of those games? You never know. If that's the case, then we know that there is a chance for us to push towards those playoff places. It's not necessarily going to make me believe that at that point, but we know we're looking at that end of the table, not as we might have been a few weeks ago, thinking we're a bit too south of mid table. So I really hope that the performances, if not the results, but the performances allow me to see a season ahead that I can relax about, that I can know I'm sort of going to have a fair high level of enjoyment, because I know that the Watford team is a team. It's a functioning team. It does have its limits, but it is going to be a season to enjoy, which we haven't had for a very long time. Jace?
Yeah, I suppose a couple of things for me. It's the Championship, innit, so anything can happen. I almost feel I don't want to try and predict what might happen or worry about what might happen. Just let it happen. It's sport. And that's why we don't go, because we know what's going to happen. We go because we want to be entertained, and anything could happen. So that's the way I'm looking at it. And also, Ozan Tufan winner incoming at Hull.
I think that sums it up perfectly, Jace. What this clutch of six games has done has given us the opportunity to now go into it and enjoy it. We're probably not going down. We're almost certainly not going up. And you might criticise me for this, and it might speak to a lack of sort of cutting edge or competitive instinct or whatever. But I'm quite like, at the moment, going to games and just enjoying it for what it is, not having to worry about what the outcome means and so on and so forth. And I know that is the very essence of sport. But I think we've had such a tumultuous time of it as Watford supporters for so long now. It's been uncertain and disappointing and upsetting and worrying, that just to turn up and watch the football for what it is, 90 minutes of 11v11, of sort of, in the main, honest endeavour, and quality is obviously nowhere near what it was in the Premier League, but the games have been absorbing. And when we were slipping down the table, I thought, this is going to be awful. We cannot, as supporters, take this hit again of seeing us languishing at the bottom. And I think what's great about this little clutch of games, it gives us the opportunity to do what both of you have just talked about, which is go to the football, enjoy it. You're right, John. Let's not worry about the points. Let's hope that Watford turn up on the pitch and they give us something to talk about, something to smile about, something to cheer about if we're in the stands. Because ultimately, that's what it's all about. We spoke at the top of the podcast about Paul and his son Ethan. That is what it's all about. Enjoying a game like that, and kill me for not having that competitive spirit and wanting Watford to be the best they can possibly be. Of course I do, but I'm at the moment I'm just loving just being able to turn up and watch it for what it is. And I think that's just me. And I think you're right. For the next clutch of games, we're going to be testing ourselves against better opposition, which is good fun. Ask me after we've lost at Leicester. Ask me when we've lost at home to Norwich, if I still feel like it's good fun. We'll be having a different conversation. But we're looking ahead to it. We've got a spring in our step, and we've earned the right just to chill and enjoy it a little bit, thanks to Valerian Ismail and the team's performances.
I think the other thing to remember, I think the fact that, the reason that John and I are so relaxed about it is because we're both New York Giants fans, and Watford are looking like world beaters at the moment in comparison to to them.
Definitely not the greatest thing. But thank you very much for your time, Jason.
Ah, thank you.
And thank you, Michael.
Cheers, lads.
Enjoy the time off and preparation for what is going to be a good run of games. I've got the vibes. I've got the feelings. Of course, we'll be here every step of the way talking about it, breaking it up. But of course, we aren't doing it every single week, picking apart every single game. So you might have heard last week with our quiz, but we've got a podcast on the way for the Leicester away game, where we're going to, at least part of it, we will talk about the game, but we are going to talk about one Mr. Heide Helgason. So any memories, anything specifically you remember about him and loved about him, send us an email, podcast@fromtherookerend.com. And that will be an upcoming extra bit, let's say, to one of our weekly podcasts. And if there's any sort of areas and stuff you think we should be talking about and looking into, then do send us an email with any ideas that you have. So we're back very, very soon with another From the Rookery End. Come on, you Hounds!